He's been working the crowds, but not so much the media. Don Young is ready to go back to Washington, and he seeks your vote. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Winding up our election shows, the Republican incumbent is here and ready for your questions. Our number, toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at aprn.org. U.S. House candidate Don Young is our guest this morning on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And by
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
And here we are again. Don Young, welcome back to Talk of Alaska.
Good to be here. And I was here last night on this show on the television. I thought I should homestead here in the building. So
right.
Good to be back.
It's kind of a nice neighborhood, but it might change quite a bit if the bond issue goes through when they build that sports arena down the street.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I guess I want to start with some other election issue, and I think I already know the answer, but I want to make sure you haven't changed your mind. You said, I'm making no endorsements in the U.S. Senate race, and I guess you're still in that spot?
Never. I said right at the beginning that I will work with any senators elected, but I made a decision at that time, primarily because I've been good friends of Frank and Nancy Murkowski. I've known Lisa since she was about 8 years old, and I worked with her back in Washington, D.C., as I worked with Frank. And Joe did win the primary, as I said before. So I won't endorse Lisa, but I won't endorse Joe for another reason. And I have to say this on the radio. It's my oldest daughter said if I was to endorse him, she'd never bake me another pie. And she makes very good pies. So, Joe, I'm sorry, but her pies are worth a lot to me.
Family values.
You're absolutely right.
Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And you can go ahead and get lined up for calls right now because I think you're actually the all-time record holder for number of calls taken in an hour.
I'm a record holder. Oh, I've never been a record holder. But Carl, better not do that.
But you're known for your yes or no answers frequently. They can agree with you or they're not agree with you, but that's really, there's nothing more to say.
No, Steve, one of the things that people don't understand is I don't like talking on the phone for that one reason. Too many people chatter. Just cut to the chase and say what you're going to do and then hang up. In the same way I've been, through my career, because, time is valuable, and I try to listen to people more so than to carry on a conversation if, in fact, I know the answer right off the bat.
Well, I think we'll go to something that's been talked about in our southeast region, which is one of the big efforts of Senator Murkowski's staff was to try and craft a deal for getting the lands for the Sea Alaska Native Corporation in Southeast. And it even became a campaign issue. But I understand that you, going back to the House, if you return to the House, you intend to pick that up and just continue to carry that one forward.
Yes, and I'm going to do this. I introduced this bill before Lisa ever introduced the bill. I've been in this business a long time and watched this, Injustice Act on a lot of our native corporations about not getting their land. And Sea Alaska is one of the areas that hasn't been able to get their land given to them under the Alaska Native Land Claims Act. And I think this is crucially important because that was federal land all around them. And they had a right to choose land. And what the big bone of contention, everybody says they're going outside of the ANILCA grant. And I say, yes, they probably are, but they're trying to save, according to SEAC, and people won't agree with me, to save the old-growth timber and actually select land that's been harvested already. And that's crucially important. Can there be improvements? Probably in the bill. There's no doubt about that, and I think the senator's done a good job trying to reach a compromise. But what I've found out, if you start compromising with yourself, you're going to lose. And I've always suggested that you have to start from your position, let them talk and you talk, but don't go halfway there. Then they'll negotiate from the halfway point, not from the beginning. I don't think that serves anybody.
Where do you stand with the, and there's been some dispute about this, but where do you stand with the Republican leadership in the U.S. House? It's said there is a potential that Republicans could take the House in November, and obviously the Republicans would then have the majority and control of committees. You kind of lost a bunch of authority there, and where do you stand with that now?
You know, this is the opponent's comments and the media comments. I never lost any seniority. I didn't lose any position. I stepped down from the ranking slot on resources. Remember, I'd been ranking for 10 years. I was chairman for 6 years. I became chairman of transportation. And because Richard Pombo got beat, Denny put me into the ranking membership of resources. Pretty shallow bench there, and that's what happened. I stepped down with my wife because I thought it was the best thing to do for the conference. I was under investigation. That's been settled. The leadership has told me that I'll have a slot probably at one of the four subcommittees, two on resources, or one on resources and three on transportation. There's no guarantee of that, but I really believe I'll end up with the chairman of a subcommittee, and that's about all I can expect because there's a lot of resentment to the fact that I was chairman twice. I'm the only living congressman that's ever been chairman twice of full committee, and that meant a lot for Alaska, and I did well, and that doesn't mean I still can't help write the transportation bill, help defend the mining industry, make sure that we don't be too punitive on the oil industry when it comes to development of our natural resources and fossil fuels, being able to work on public lands, trying to straighten out this over-aggressive park service we have in the state of Alaska. So there's a lot of things I'll be able to do. So what you're hearing is from some people that just don't understand how the system works.
Well, speaking of the system works, one of the things that you were really hopeful of during your last reelection was reviving the Susitna Dam. And it's not been very visible, but the fact of the matter is that there has been, you know, I know the Parnell administration is strongly for reviving that project, and I'm just sensing that the winds are blowing towards that again, and I'm wondering where you are on that and what kind of leverage you might have on that.
I had $40 million in the water bill to revive the Susitna Dam, and again, the Parnell administration is supporting it. The legislature is supporting it. It's the right thing to do. It should have been done a long time ago. I don't think necessarily that we need federal dollars to do this. We have built dams without the federal government before in this state, and I think it's one of the best investments we could do in this state. And I'm glad to see people beginning to talk about it because we keep talking about the gas line, vitally important. But if we had the Susitna Dam and the Takachama, I guess that's the way you pronounce that, lake over there, had both of those online, you'd have extremely cheap hydropower. And that would be able, you know, this whole area right here, for instance, would be able to, instead of using gas, it'd be able to electrify their homes. We'd have power available for manufacturing products, refining our natural resources. I envision smelters in the area, cleanly done so that we could take and get a higher value on our minerals, possibly big, large kilns for minor timber. If it was dried, would be very valuable. Processing of fish would be very economical. There's just so many things we could do with that kind of power.
We're talking to Don Young. He's running for re-election to the U.S. House. We had his Democratic challenger, Harry Crawford, in here last week. Harry talked a lot about empowering workers and about jobs. And I guess I'll go to that next, which is just the issue of jobs for Alaska. You talked about the timber industry and the mining industry being under attack. It would appear that there would appear to be some battle lines on mining right now.
Well, the thing that concerns me a lot is some of my opponents in the past and present talk about jobs, but they're the party that does not create jobs that make new wealth. If I was governor, and I'm not, and Sean, don't get excited, if I was governor, there's some things I would definitely do, and one would be build a dam. One, I'd sit and try to select and ask the federal government for land in southeast Alaska. We have 27,000 acres of land, 27 million acres of land that we have a right to choose as a state, and we haven't selected it. The southeast area, where it's the largest timber reserve, was off limits. the only land that was selected down there is for cities and boroughs. And so consequently, I would select 2.5 million acres off the Tonga so we could develop a permanent timber industry. We won't go back to the chip mills and the pulpwood like we should have. We'll probably go into selective logging. With the power availability we have down there, electrical power availability, and we'll increase that, we'd probably have a good, steady, working clientele down there harvesting a renewable resource, and that's part of it. Second thing we ought to be doing is being more aggressive against the federal government when they won't let us develop our resources because of the EPA, Fish and Wildlife. I can go on down the line. We have not been. We've just accepted what they've told us to do, and I think, and Dan Sullivan's doing a good job, the Attorney General, I think we can be more aggressive and say, no, we're not going to do that. We're gonna not going to allow you to stop activity in the Cook Inlet because of the beluga whale, because you're wrong. I can go into burning wood in the Fairbanks area, which really disturbs me because they have decided, they being the United States government, to let the timber burn all summer long, tremendous particulate amount in the air, really a respiratory problem, and consequently people are getting sick, but that's okay. That's natural. I mean, you try to put a stick of wood in the fire, that's unnatural. So whatever they're doing, they're not letting us create the jobs necessary in the great state of Alaska. And that's what I've been trying to do. And if you check my record, I've probably created more jobs in the state than any other legislator available because of actions of the federal government. You know, the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline, that was my bill. The 200-mile limit, believe it or not, was named Stevens Magnuson. That was originated in the House. The original Gas Line Act itself, that originated in the House, and I can go on down the line. So I've created jobs, and they're real jobs. They're not monkey jobs, as I call them. So I'll continue to do that.
So you heard it here, reining in the EPA. We're hearing that if the Republicans do get control of either house of the Congress, that there may be more bipartisanship than we've seen so far. And indeed, one would have to say that under the Democrats, the House has been quite partisan in a way. They just kind of had enough votes to push the Republicans aside and do what they would, do what they will. How do you see that? You're one that has worked through party lines, worked across party lines more than many people might realize.
Well, I'm very optimistic because what happened, and I will blame one of our own for this. Newt Gingrich started this. He didn't like the idea. When I first went to Congress, the committee chairmen were the cardinals, not the appropriators. They were the cardinals of the Congress, of the House of Representatives. They actually ran the House, the John Dingles, and I go on down the line. The Mo Udalls, they ran the House. And because they did run the committees and they ran the House, they had to be and reach across the aisle. They had to be bipartisan. Not totally, but they were very helpful. The Alaska National Lands Act, I got 69 amendments adopted in that bill because I worked with Mo Udall. Wasn't everything I wanted, but I was able to do that because he knew that he couldn't get everything done without us. It passed by a very short margin of votes. So.
Yeah, we remember.
That's right. And so then Newt didn't like that idea. The chairman is setting the program. So he decided to get the power back to the House. He wasn't able to do it right away because there was a lot of older House members that took the chairmanships, including myself. And I do think I was the last chairman that would tell the leadership to go suck an egg if I thought they were wrong. And when I was in transportation, that was one of the biggest turns. I was rogue before Sarah Palin was ever rogue because they would try to tell me what to do. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I had 75 votes in the House, and they were very loyal to me. If you check the background, I never had an adversarial vote in the committee because Jim Oberstar and I worked it out. Well, when Nancy Pelosi became chairman, she liked that idea. And she's very, very egomaniac, and she took the power back into the House, and she told the chairman what the agenda was going to be. And they couldn't do what they wanted to do, so they couldn't reach across the aisle to the minority because the bills were really written in her office. And that caused great hostility. We were totally shuttered aside. She was the boss. Forget it. We're not necessary. Just because you represent more than 50% of the people, that doesn't count. And so consequently, the whole Congress has transferred the power to the president because we haven't done a lot. You know, we name more post offices and more weeks of the year for something that meant nothing than we did in any time in history of the Congress. We passed three bills that were detrimental to the nation. Number one was the cap and trade, whom my opponent supports, and he doesn't now, but he did. He's changed after the people found out what it does to the people of Alaska. He passed the worst health care bill I think ever came in existence, the only one, and it did pass the Senate. Cap and trade did not. Financial reform, those three bills are probably more overreaching than any bills I've ever experienced. But overall, we haven't passed a budget. We haven't passed appropriating bills. We haven't done the things we should have done because there's no feeling of being part of the system by the minority. Now, will that change? I think it will. I say that because John Boehner, who I believe will be the speaker, has said that he recognizes the importance of the chairman. And because he knows that's the only way we can really get something done and not let the power go to the executive branch, and that's what's happening right now.
So you think Boehner would let the committee chairs once again?
Well, he said that publicly, so we'll see what happens. I believe he will. Remember, the grunions around anybody that's in leadership, you know, they don't want to give up anything. So if he can keep his grunions in deal, it would be good.
Let's go to Joe, joins the program from Petersburg. Joe, you're on the air with Don Young.
Hello, Congressman, happy to be with you this morning. Thank you for taking this call. I talked with you when you were in Petersburg last fall about the Sea Alaska issue. And I thought we had come to an agreement that, it needed to be a little more carefully crafted.
I think he did say that earlier, Joe. I don't know if you were listening, but he did say exactly that earlier in the show already.
It's my understanding you're going to introduce your old bill, and we're really not finding satisfaction. Our communities, Point Baker and Port Protection, many other communities throughout the region, are being sorely pressed upon to make a lot of sacrifices. When Don said that Sea Alaska is saving old-growth timber, I just got to laugh to myself, because if that's what you believe, that is a very naive intent.
Okay, now, Joe, let me suggest it. Now, you and I sat there and talked for a long time until some woman came up and interrupted us. Now, you're not looking for a solution. I've said I'm going to introduce my bill. Yeah, I didn't say it was going to be the final bill, but I'm not going to start negotiating from halfway there and have SEAC get involved as they are and break their word as they've done in the past. That's very simple. So if you want to solve this problem, I'm willing to sit down, but I'm not going to negotiate from a position of weakness. That's simple.
The Sea Alaska position is they're almost out of timber, and I fish off Doll Island and outside of Heidelberg, and the place is just scalped bare. They make the pulp mill look like careful land managers under the Forest Service. They are cutting their way through the timber as fast as they can, huckleby buck, and damn the torpedoes. So
all I want to do is let them select federal land that has been cut over. And that's my goal, and I believe that will be the eventual end of this bill. And you and I can discuss this.
Alaska's already having trouble finding 70,000 acres for Sea Alaska to log, and now you say you want to select a 2.5 million acre state forest out of the remaining Congress thing. And thing, I think it's preposterous and ridiculous. And I hate to see you after a long and distinguished career try to bamboozle some kind of crack-brained idea.
Joe, you're losing me. You're losing me because you're not willing to sit down and talk either. You've made up your mind. I know exactly where you're coming from. You don't want them. You don't want them to select overcut timber.
Okay.
That land doesn't exist, and the little pieces that are left, communities are trying to work with to build the future on. And I don't think with the million acres of clear cuts we have in the Tongass now, I don't think that's an idea that we can carry forward in the future. I just want to share that with you.
That's fine. That's
all right.
Good. Thank you.
I've come to appreciate
you
even when we disagree.
Thank you.
So keep smiling, Don, and thank you very much.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for concluding the call. It's Talk of Alaska. Don Young is with us. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@APRN.org. And by email, Kevin in Denali Park says, Congressman Young, why do you call the Park Service over-aggressive? I think it's one of the finest institutions in America.
And you probably work for the Park Service. Very frankly, I'm so irritated with Yukon Charlie. Read a land gone lonesome, a country gone lonesome. This is a classic example of when they arrested that guy in the middle of the Yukon River on state water. SWAT team shotguns leaving their passengers on the bank. That's a classic example of a Park Service gone awry. And when I get to be chairman of that committee, we're going to have a lot of hearings. So if you're with the Park Service, you think it's a great group, plan on coming back to Washington, D.C.
Do you have any thoughts on the permitting system they're talking about for Denali to limit the number of people climbing?
You mean on the mountain, Mount
McKinley? The
mountain,
yeah.
You know, I'm one of these people that believe that if you do climb and you get in trouble, you pay for it. It's that simple. And I think they're beginning to do that. This idea that you can, who would want to climb the mountain as heavily traveled as it is now? There's a lot of other mountains in this great state that are equally as challenging, I believe. And so you're out of my realm in a way because I can't stand heights, so I don't know why anybody wants to do it. But if you want to do it, then you suffer the consequences. It's as an active responsibility. Don't expect the Park Service to pay for it or somebody else come in and rescue you. You, in fact, take the chance, and that's what happens. Now, if they want to limit it because it's a high cost, that's another issue we'd have to look at.
Well, turning is while we're in the interior, while we've moved from the EPA and the Forest Service to the Interior Department, the Park Service, but I want to go to Fish and Wildlife now and the ANWR thing. The 1002 area, after it was very odd, they did this planning process for ANWR and said that 1002 is up to Congress, so we're just going to leave that out. And then when they got done, they said, well, we now want to consider wilderness status for the 1002 area. Is this this? What's going on with this process? Well, what would you do about
this?
This
is the Obama administration going against the congressional action. The congressional action says no more in Alaska. It has to go through Congress, and even then, that law supersedes the additional addition that they're talking about. And this is a classic example of what I'm saying about. We've got an over-aggressive government in our midst. We have 160,000 pages of regulations, 1,450,000 laws that were never voted on, issued by your agencies, which are an extension of the executive branch, and it costs $1,100,000,000 a year to operate. And I, as far as I'm concerned, this is against the existing law. I'm sure the state would file for this, uphold it, but it has to go through Congress if they attempt to do it. And when I'm chairman of that committee, it's not going to go anywhere.
In your years in transportation, there was this there was investigation. There was a lot of money that you spent on legal defense. It appears that it's blown over. I want to see if you have some comments about it now afterwards.
Now, Steve, you know better. I've never commented on this issue. I've said all along I was perfectly innocent. That got me through this thing. I do think it was wrong to have these investigations over rumors, insinuations, innuendos. It was all politically motivated, and we saw what happened to Ted Stevens. But other than that, I'm not going to comment on it. It's over. It's behind me, and I'm going forth.
And the changing of the Coconut Road appropriation?
I have no knowledge of that.
Okay, let's go to the email, Carl from Seward, Alaska. And this one, I have to admit, I'm not well briefed on this, but apparently on the TV show last night, the issue, according to Carl, you said you'd never heard of the Choest family, which Harry Crawford claimed was your biggest contributors. Who is your biggest contributor? Where are they located, and what is your relationship?
I have no knowledge who's my biggest contributor. I don't keep track of the money that's delivered to my campaign. I never see the dollars. I never spend the dollars. I have nothing to do with the dollars. This is a campaign business. You have to receive the dollars in order to run a campaign. You know, it's very easy for people to point fingers, but you ought to check their backgrounds and see where they've got their money and see, you know, who's supporting them. And mine's a public record. Look up the FEC report if you want to find out. It's public knowledge. I don't have any knowledge. I've never looked at my FEC report.
Don Young is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. It's a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. And so heading back to Washington, if you gain re-election, you say you'll get probably some subcommittee chairmanships, and that's the best you can expect. You said that you expect a more bipartisan atmosphere, that the committee chairs will have more power if the Republicans take it. There will be two more years of an Obama administration. Would you expect that to continue to go in a partisan mode like we've seen so far?
I think this is the worst president. I used to think Jimmy Carter was the worst president we ever had. But this person has no concept how. Remember, he was not a good senator. He did very little in the Senate. He got elected and started running for president. He had more missed votes than even I, which is really a large amount of votes. So he wasn't a good senator. He has no knowledge of the legislative process. And he has no concept with the, maybe a little better now because the Emanuel is gone. But he's not going to work with the Republicans unless he wants to get reelected. I watched this from 94 to 96. You know, this is another example of your media not being right up front because they don't want to report the truth sometimes. We got elected in 94. In 95 and 96, we balanced the budget. The Congress did. The president doesn't balance the budget, but Bill Clinton got credit for it. You gave him credit for it. Everybody else gave him credit for it. Ah, Bill Clinton, hurrah, yay, yay. We did it. And when the government got shut down, we got blamed for it, which he also shut it down. So it was a smart thing for him to do by working a little bit with the Republicans, enough to look like he was bipartisan. And he ran in 96 and got reelected again for four more years. So this is an issue that maybe Obama is smart enough to see that. I doubt it. But I really believe for the good of this country, we ought to have a new president in 2012. And I'm not sure who it's going to be. That's one of our biggest weaknesses. Our bench is relatively weak. And so we'll see what happens down the line. And, you know, even if we take control, you know, we talk about repealing the health care bill. Not, as long as he's there, it's not going to happen. We can slow it down. We can stop the implication of it. We cannot fund it. We can, remember, go back to the regulations. Anything we do in the next 2 years is not issue any, allow any new regulations to be issued and to review those that have been issued. And pass any law we do pass, take out that one sentence that says the secretary shall promulgate regulations to implement the act. That's what's caused this problem. And we'll have one other sentence in there now, take that one out and say this is the law. And the agency says, well, we can't operate this way, then let them come back to us and let us amend the law. That's legislative process, and that is how people expect us to vote on it, not allowing some agency to implement 4,000 new laws last year. 4,000 last year. Took Bush administration, we got to bring that up, 4 years to get 4,000. 4,000 new laws never voted on. Now, the people like that, fine. But that's what's costing this country a tremendous amount of money. We can't function in this country with that kind of, I call, overgoverning by agencies.
I think we're hearing over 30 years of experience speaking to us here in the U.S. House. It's Talk of Alaska with Don Young as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. And by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
It is Talk of Alaska. Don Young, seeking re-election, is with us and ready to take your calls at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. From Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422, and email is talk@aprn.org. If you'll go back to Washington, regardless of whether you're re-elected or not, and there will be this kind of lame duck session, and as you've pointed out, the appropriations bills haven't been passed yet. Do you have any clue as to what is likely to happen with that?
Well, here's my prediction, Steve. Two things are going to happen this lame duck. There's going to be an awful lot of offices being cleared out. That's always a panic time. And by the way, I have great sympathy for them, regardless of their D's or R's. It makes no difference, because when I found out they give you 21 days to clear your office out, I had 36 years of stuff in the office, let alone my staff. 21 days to take out 30 years of paraphernalia is tough. So I have great sympathy for them. But having said that, there will be a great unrest because of those that lost or say, oh, the heck with it. But what will probably happen, I doubt if there'll be a budget. I think you're going to have a continuing resolution at 2010 levels on all agencies. That's be my prediction. They will probably pass the tax cuts of 91, 92, George Bush tax cuts. In what form, I don't know, but there will be some form. That's heavily popular, even on the D side. There's a dispute whether it's up to 250,000 and below. So that's it.
All right, let's go to Kevin, joins the program from Anchorage. Kevin, you're on the air with Don Young. Whoops, we lost Kevin. All right. Well, I guess then we'll go to Paul in Soldotna. Paul in Soldotna, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I want to say what a great quality show Talk of Alaska is, and I really like it.
You must be his son. I mean, Steve's son or something.
I have people from my hometown here.
I'm just a common citizen that actually works in Soldotna and lives in Kusilhof.
Oh, good.
But I appreciate the show. One thing, the Cook Inlet aquaculture, I believe, was enhancing the sockeye salmon run by planting smolt up in Tustamina Lake.
Yes.
Which feeds the Kusilhof River. And that got shut down because they didn't want a commercial enterprise operating in a, I believe it's a national park.
Yeah, actually, I believe it's a wilderness area and a wildlife refuge.
Yeah, you're probably right. Is there any way that can be fixed?
Well, I'm working. Thank you for the comment, because I've been trying to get that done. I get to be chairman. There's a strong possibility. That's another example of, I call, purist working for an agency that don't have a lick of smarts. The idea that was a commercial operation is nonsense. I get so frustrated when you get somebody out of Massachusetts or California or maybe New York, or let's try another state. Let's say Ohio, and they come up to Alaska, and they've gone to school, and they know what's best for Alaska. This was trying to reestablish a run of salmon. And I do think that to say, oh, this is in a wilderness area and we can't do that, is an example of what should not occur in these national pieces of land. And I go back to that country gone lonesome again, that's on the Yukon River, where they arrested that guy. But, you know, there was 10,000 people in that arena from 1900 until 1946. And there was trapping, mining, logging, fishing, all this stuff. And then we put Yukon Charlie in. You know who's on there right now? A bunch of these people from outside. They go up in the summer. They're not there in the winter. They go up in the summer, and they stand around and say, we are the government. And that's why I'm so frustrated with it. This is not using common sense. And we will change it.
And this is an enhancement. I don't believe it's reestablishing a run. This is an enhancement.
Well, yeah, but when you see their argument, nature should do it. You're enhancing the run. And I think that's a good thing to do. If I can get more fish without damaging anything, which I believe you can do, why not? I think that's the way to go.
I guess if we're going to do that, let's open things up to farm fishing, which...
No, don't go farm fishing. That's not what we're doing.
I know. Let me finish. That was my point. I think enhancing in the natural stocks is a much better, preferable method than opening it up to farm fish, and none of us, I believe, there's very few, if any, want farm fish.
No, and I thank you, and again, there's the same government, your government, that wants to put fish farms in the middle of the ocean, and you know, that's wrong. Our biggest asset is natural fish.
Yeah, I agree with you. Wild stocks.
Wild stocks.
One more comment. I went to the Chamber of Commerce lunch yesterday with you and Mr. Crawford speaking, and I enjoyed that. But there's one comment you made at the end of the lunch was, if you had happened to win a moose calendar, you wouldn't accept it. Can you clarify or give us a reason why?
No, a moose calendar is from ADN.
Yes.
If anything has got the Alaskan Daily Worker in it, I'm not taking.
Okay, well, I guess that's too bad because it does not promote any political. You know, that calendar is a moose calendar of Alaska. You know, too bad you couldn't take it back there and give it to Nancy Pelosi or something.
Well, you understand that if you've gone through what I've gone for 38 years with their comments about me for 38 years, you'll understand why I don't want anything to do with them.
Well, that's too bad.
Yep.
I'm really sorry that you have to be like that and you couldn't have an open mind on what it actually was. It was a donation to help folks with education.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good luck, sir.
All right, Paul from Saldatna, thanks for your good words there. And let's go to Joe. Joins the program from Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Don Young, Joe.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
Thank you for working with Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski to get the Coast Guard Cutter Storrs brought back to Alaska as a museum. And we appreciate all your efforts, and we're frustrated that that didn't happen this Congress. But my real question is, we're big Coast Guard state in that we got 3,000 miles of coastline. And what are we going to do in the next Congress to get more assets up here? And how are we going to deal with the Arctic, which is opening up and ice-free more and more? So, you know, you followed that for years. What can we do to help you get more Coast Guard assets up here?
Well, thank you. And by the way, the stories make it a museum. That's my project. You know, they're working with me. I don't work with them. They're working with me on that. And the reason it didn't become a reality is because they took everything out of the Coast Guard reauthorization bill on the Senate side. And we will get that done. I've talked to Jim Oberstar. We will get that done. It's a good project, and it will happen. It's the right thing to do. It's a historic ship, and it should be stationary. The Coast Guard, you know, that's one of the areas I'm pretty proud of. I can't solve everything, but when I started, we had a Coast Guard station in Ketchikan. We had one in Juneau, and that was it. And we have one now in Sitka. We have one in Cordova. We have the biggest one in Kodiak. We have a small one in Anchorage. And the Coast Guard is one of the larger federal agencies in the state. And the unfortunate thing is the Congress over the years has underfunded them, yet charged them with more missions. When I first started, they were actually in the navigation business, period, buoy attenders, and that was it, and search and rescue to some extent. The Bering Sea didn't exist as far as fishing activities go. The foreign fleet was 12 miles off our shores. And so we're working. Now, to answer your question, I do believe that people see the wisdom of funding the Coast Guard. And I will take credit on one thing. When they organized Homeland Security, and I was down in President Bush's office, and all the chairmen sitting around, and they showed the diagram what's happening. And I said, Mr. President, all due respects, you're not going to get a Homeland Security bill. I'm the chairman. You won't get it unless you change the structure of your diagram. And they said, what do you mean? I said, you got the Coast Guard under the Border Patrol, way at the bottom of the list. Now, if you look at that layout now, they're parallel with the secretary, the commandant is. And we're working hard to try to get them funded. Unfortunately, they're going through the Homeland Security bill. I'm trying to get them separated away from Homeland, put back in either Commerce or a separate entity themselves so they have the recognition they deserve. And that's going to be a big challenge. We have strong support with Lo Biondo. He's another chairman of the subcommittee. I believe we'll make progress. We just have to keep working on it.
Yeah. Joe, was that it?
That's it. Thanks. And I'll let somebody else get some points in here with the congressman.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Joe.
All right. Thank you, Joe, from Juneau. And, this is kind of amazing to see every other Arctic nation beefing up their vessels, their icebreakers and whatnot, and yet the Coast Guard has got three icebreakers, one's not really an icebreaker.
Well, they've got three icebreakers, which I helped fund 35 years ago. Only one of them operates, the Healy, and it's old. And we're trying to get more funding for icebreakers or have icebreakers built and leased by the Coast Guard because the Arctic is changing. And I've got a bill in to find a port up there. We have money now to map the seabed up there. which is crucially important. I have had geologists tell me they believe there's more oil in the North Pole than any place else in the world. And that sure brings people's minds, you know, oil is not created by ice. But we need a presence up there because climate change is occurring. I'll be the first one to admit it. I don't believe man did it because it's happened 11 times before. And I will suggest that the Coast Guard's got to play a major role to make sure as outside ships go 3 miles off our shore, we have some say because that's international water. Actually, after 200 miles, it's international water. We have some say what happens, navigational aids, et cetera, across that great northern part about this globe.
Yeah. There was a technical conference here a couple of weeks ago, about a month now ago, where the icebreaker people were all, you know, engineers and whatnot. And it turns out that one of the shipping routes that's most likely to open quickest is the direct route right through the North Pole, that the ice is actually thinner, just going straight across. And then you start looking at, well, whose jurisdiction is that? And you see, obviously, they have got to come through the Bering Strait.
Yeah, well, if they go through, we have jurisdiction over that. But they do have control or mutual control. Anything beyond 200-mile limits is jointly owned by Iceland, Greenland, Alaska, or the United States, Russia. China's even getting involved now. I don't know how they figure that one out. But everybody's going to want that route. It's not a new thing. You know, the Northwest route was always sought. We always try to find it. Mankind's biggest drive has spent thousands of lives looking for it. And by the way, it was open 11,000 years ago, but there was nobody here.
Yeah. Yeah. So it would seem that, as you say, you got to do it one step at a time. And it would seem the step you're looking at now is to figure out where the Coast Guard can have an Arctic base.
Yes, and that's going to be difficult because we've looked at Nome. Nome is probably the best because it has some infrastructure. We're looking at out of Kotzebue. Teller is very good, but there's nothing there. But there's hardly anything on the slope at all of any depth that could take an icebreaker capability close to shore. So it's going to be a challenge to figure out how we station something up there.
Yeah, and I would assume that then it sounds like you or somebody in your staff is already actively tracking this
issue.
Well,
I've introduced three bills, one for the mapping, one of them is passed, one for the identification of needed navigational aids. There's one other one, I forgot which one it did, but we are well aware of this as one of our thing.
Okay, let's go to Stu, joins the program from Muldoon. Stu, you're on Talk of Alaska with Don Young.
Thanks. I have a question. Our community council, Northeast Community Council, sent Representative Young and everybody else running a letter. We have a situation out here with the military property. We're trying to expand a municipal light and power plant in Muldoon, and they are planning to actually take over a big part of Centennial Park, and we're trying to get the military to agree to expand about 24 acres so we can expand a plant without taking out a park. You know, the federal government does a great deal to help our economy here in Muldoon, especially the military. But is there any way that the senator could help shed some light on this?
Okay, he's Congress, House member.
But House member, yeah, sorry.
You can call me a senator. It makes them mad, so I enjoy it. But, yeah, if you've sent me a letter, when you say you sent me a letter, we have a office down in the Peterson Tower. That's the best way to communicate with me because you send me a letter back east. It goes through anthrax treatment, and the time I get it, you can't read it. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm trying to get my number. The number in my office is 907-271-5978. That's my Anchorage office. And you either talk to Chad Pageant or Catherine Petty, and that's to be the two people you talk to. And we'll find out if we can't, because this is an example. I think we could probably help you out.
Oh, thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Yeah, Stu, I would say that is the route to take. From personal experience, you just go to the office locally, deal with the local person, and often that's the best way to get through. And I didn't even think about that anthrax thing, though.
Oh, that's terrible. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life, but they're super sensitive. And when I get a letter, once in a while I do it. Usually it's through they send my staff email or et cetera, et cetera. But a letter just deteriorates when you open up. And if you anything else, it turns green. So, we're safe.
It's safe, but those powerful chemical residues, who knows what we've got going on with that. Let's go to Gary, who joins the program from Anchorage. You're on the air, Gary, with Don Young.
Yeah, Mr. Young. I've got a question about the article. I don't know if you saw it. Julie O'Malley in the Anchorage Daily News wrote an article about Medicare, the problems here in Alaska. You know, out of all the medical doctors, you can't get a new one. You know, I'm headed for I'm turning 60 now, and in 5 years, seems like the government wants me to just hurry up and die, because you're not being able to find a doctor. Unless you go down south, most people I know, you know, they go down south for the annual checkups and stuff that are over 65. This, you know, my own doctor, even my chiropractor, is telling me, well, you know, once you hit 65, you're out the door. We're not going to see you anymore. So you know, you got a toothache. You want to get your back adjusted. You know, you got to go to the emergency room at the hospital. What's the deal with this? Why can't we get this fixed? You know, and if we can't get this fixed, how the hell do they think that we're going to get a nationwide health plan going?
Well, you bring
That's
up
my question.
You a very valid point. It's one of our big challenges. Senator Stevens and I got full payments for services rendered under Medicare for 2 years, and then it was eliminated because it was so successful. Other states have the same problem. We have a bigger problem here. And you're right. There's about five doctors, I believe, in Anchorage that will take Medicare patients because they're not being reimbursed what it costs them. And I'm arguing that we have to, in fact, increase the reimbursement so it's done correctly and there's not any fraud taking place, so that you do have an ability to go under Medicare to a doctor if you're 65 years of age. Now, some people, well, how are you going to pay for that? Well, I argue one of the ways to pay for it is, stop this regulatory drain of our economy of $1 trillion, $100 million a year, implementing regulatory laws that were never passed. We'd have the money to solve this problem, and that's a big challenge. But I understand your problem. I have this complaint constantly, and now some people say neighborhood health clinics are good, and they are. But we ought to make sure if you can go to your doctor under Medicare. And that's going to be the big challenge to this Congress and the next Congress. And we're well aware of it. And we did solve the problem for 2 years. It was so successful that they eliminated it.
And my second thought on this also is on this national health care. You know, eventually something like that's going to happen. Why don't we do it just like we do with the natives? You know, we set up these hospitals. And if you want, you know, you're that destitute, you got no insurance, you go to like the native hospital, but it would be the national hospital or something like that. Why can't the system work like this rather than trying to force everybody into an insurance policy that everybody knows is not going to work?
Well, you got two problems now. Be careful, because some other people have tried that. Canada has terrible health care. They keep saying how good it is. Go to Canada and try to get treated. You won't. There's ads right now on television tells people that have brain tumors that can't get operated because you're not qualified. Britain the same way. I will say I took the model of this native hospital here in Anchorage and submitted it to the health care committee and say, this is what we should do. This is a well-run program, good connections with the patient and doctors. People get good service, and it can be done that way. It was ignored in this bill. This bill is a disastrous bill, by the way, because it doesn't help health care at all.
Yeah, Gary, I want to thank you very much for your call. And this, I know, Congressman Young, that there are, you know, doctors here really have done everything they can to try and find a way to work with this. I think one of the problems is that a person can't, once they go into Medicare, they're not allowed to supplement it maybe it's $10 more for a doctor visit. They can't put that money in.
And you're right. This is another thing silly. You can go in, you're under Medicare, and just as you mentioned, let's say the doctor would cost him $500 to treat me, and the Medicare covers $400. I can't give him the extra $100. And that doesn't make sense to me.
Me either.
That's, again, your government in action.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Fire Island Wind, a renewable energy alternative to imported foreign liquefied natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
Sean Parnell and Ethan Berkowitz want to be your next governor. Do you know who you'll vote for? Hear what the candidates have to say on Debate for the State 2010. On Thursday, October 28th at 8 p.m., Alaska Public Broadcasting brings you a live debate with candidates for Alaska governor. You can submit questions now. Email to questions@debateforthestate.org. Then watch or listen to your local public television or radio station, October 28th at 8 p.m.
Yeah, we're counting the days until the general election now, and it's gotten extremely hectic. Take Representative Young. There he was down in Kenai yesterday, and then last night here on the public television debate for the state, now back for Talk of Alaska on the next morning. So when you leave here, I believe you do a luncheon speech.
Yeah. At the World Council, and that's always interesting.
They said it's going to be a major policy speech. You're going to give me some?
I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. I've never written anything in my life. But they asked me, so I'll go down there and they'll put up with me for an hour, and I hope their lunch is better than most of them.
Well, how has this campaign been?
Well, the campaign's good. You know, I was a little irritated, and I think you read the op-ed in the Daily Worker today. This campaign's been a little bit different because there's a great vacuum there. The senatorial race has taken all the play out of the Harry's and my race, and that's his big complaint. But I've offset that by traveling tremendous miles around the state, as I've done all through the last 2 years, and I've been doing for the last 40 years, trying to meet people, see people, talk to people, listen to people, get things done. And that's what a congressman is supposed to do. And just because I'm not spending a whole lot on media doesn't mean I'm not actively involved. But if you watch this media, I don't know who's listening to it anymore. I think you're numb. I guess you don't get paid for any of your ads or anything else, but everybody else, they just one after the other, yada, yada.
It's good for business.
Oh, yeah, and they love it, you know. But the truth of the matter is, you know, that's one thing they don't like my suggestions about changing the primary. The date of the primary in this state is a disaster. And I've argued this for a long time. Nobody listens to me. But the 24th of August is probably the worst time you could ever have a political primary. People are in the rural areas are hunting, fishing, picking berries, and the urban areas are sending the kids to school and getting ready to go moose hunting and yada, 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 and winter's coming and they don't have any interest in politics. And I argue we ought to change the 1st of June, right after school's out, or to the first day of October. And that causes the media to have a fit because there wouldn't be all this money coming into the media thing for 6 months. But that would work a whole lot better. Other states have done it for that same reason, so there isn't this constant banging on television about how bad you are. The negativism in this is not good for this country nor this state.
When you have already talked about 2012.
Yeah. It goes fast. I'm physically in good shape. That could change overnight. I mean, I have to admit that. I've told people that. I'm good for the job. Some people don't agree with me, but everybody knows where I'm coming from. I've always been Don Young. I've always been outspoken. I've always told the truth. I've always been upfront. And I hope people understand I speak well for them back in Washington, D.C. I make this comment sometimes. Someone's going to get upset with me. But, you know, everybody knows the congressman from Alaska. And you can go back and check it yourself, Don Young. Now, they don't all love me. They don't all hate me. But they all respect me. And I think that's a great asset when you're the congressman for all of Alaska. And there's difference of opinions. I accept that. I see everybody after I'm elected. I've never shut anybody out of the office after they've said bad things about me. That's the other thing. If someone ever starts telling me that I'm a pretty good guy, I may not run. But they usually say something nasty, and I'm going to run every time they do that. So you, those that listen to me, be nice, and I may not run. But as long as you say something about me bad, I'm going to be running for this office. And you want to throw me out, throw me out.
Was that when you had that heart crisis and had the operation? It really seems like that was a major change in your life. It seemed like a big change in your lifestyle that happened right there.
Well, two things happened. One is that you realize how vulnerable you are. I do have it, and I still do. You don't get over heart disease, but I have it checked every 6 months, and that's why I said I could. I do think some people are running against me. Hope I drop dead. They won't admit that, but the reality is that's what they're looking for. But I have it checked, and once you go through that experience, well, you know, you could die today. you get a better prospect or perspective of life. You're really not that important, but you have to live your life as you live it. And I say, I don't want to live long, I want to live well. And I've taken care of myself physically, and I've worked, you know, hard to make sure that I try to provide for this state and for my family, and leave a legacy of dedication to the state, and I think I've done that.
We don't hear about the hunting trips anymore.
Well, that's another issue that bothers me. I don't get to hunt as much as I used to because it takes a lot of time. I will probably go deer hunting a couple times this year, but in Alaska, it's not as easy as people think it is. This is a big state. When you go hunting, it takes time, and you have to take care of the meat. I don't have a butcher shop. I like that, by the way. I'm a pretty good doctor. I know about every muscle in the body. And over the years, I've killed 52 moose, and I've butchered them all. And so that's given me a feeling of, well, maybe I should take more time. But then I think, you know, I owe it to the state. And when the state decides I don't owe it to them, they'll get rid of me.
Do you get back to Fort Yukon?
Yep, I went back to Fort Yukon this August, had a great trip. I took 9 of my grandkids up, trying to expose them to the real life, no running water, shower in the Connex, breakfast on time. Grandpa cooked it, and if you weren't there, you didn't get to eat. Had to wash your hands and face, and you had to sit at the table and say grace, and we just had a hoot. We shot some ducks and caught some fish and went on the boat and actually studied the climate change on permafrost in Fort Yukon. I had them dig an outhouse hole.
You've got 1 minute to say why Alaskans should reelect you.
Well, I want to thank Alaskans. Everybody that voted for me, and even those that vote against me. This is a great state. I hope everybody participates in this election, understanding that the decisions made Tuesday will affect the state for a long time to come. I am continuing to want to serve you, and if you don't think I can do it, then vote for the other guy. But I do believe I'm best for the job, not because it's for Don Young. It's just that you have to understand this job is important. And then the seniority is absolutely important. Being able to know how to do it is extremely important. So again, I just want to thank all Alaskans that voted for me, and I urge you to vote for Don Young. Fill in that circle and vote for me on November the 2nd.
All right. Well, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a good show.
All right. Thank you to Dave Waldron on the controls, Pat Yak and BD Trentino on the phones. Next week, Theodore for Native Heritage Month.
Is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.